Good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm William English, and today's guest is Clive Graham.
Hello again.
Good afternoon, Clive.
Yes.
Clive is, what should we call you? The a co-member of Morphogenesis. Paradigm Records is your label, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, that's right.
Do we call it Paradigm Records?
Some people do. I mean, I've always called it Paradigm Discs.
Right.
But it gets called Paradigm. The only reason I put the discs on was just so as to, in case someone else came along and started a label called Paradigm, which, of course, they have done.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, there have been a few subsequent. So it needed to have another word on it, and I kind of regret using that word now, but you have to live with what you choose.
Yeah.
When you start out thinking, oh, I'll just release a CD.
Yes.
And then you find out years later you've released 20-odd. So like you never really intended it to go that way or never thought about it in any sense. But there you go. So
when did you start? When did you start it?
Well, it started in 95 when I was working in at These Records. And I just various customers would come in who didn't have deals. Contracts, whatever the word is for these high-powered electronic improvisers that you get in London, and so I just thought, well, let's put a few of these unknowns together and make a London compilation, which I did in '95, and then I ended up doing that. Ended up to be a three-volume series eventually of unknown London artists.
Or so was that when unknown. These Records was down in Wandsworth somewhere?
Yeah, that was the very tail end of the Wandsworth Road incarnation.
Yes.
Before the building virtually collapsed in on itself. What an amazing place that was. You don't get record shops like that.
No.
That's for sure.
No.
anymore. So, yeah, that was a good experience and made one or two lifelong friends in the process. Most of the people that ended up on those compilations never really released much more subsequently. It was almost like the kiss of death, putting out this compilation track by them. But I still stand by just about everything that came out on those discs.
Hmm. So how long was these records on the Wandsworth Road?
Well, I mean, these records sprung out of Recommended Records and had the same premises. They literally, 387 Wandsworth Road was the address. And so I don't know when the exact crossover was, and I always find it hard to recollect exactly how it even happened, how Recommended became These. And it was a very intertwined thing.
Right.
And the stock, the actual stock in the shop was pretty much maintained and carried on as well from one incarnation to the next.
Yeah.
So all I know is I think that, I mean, the Recommended Records was a shop there. Albeit kind of very difficult to actually locate,
yes.
Right the way from the early 80s.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I remember going, I went there once, I think, to that shop on the Wandsworth Road. And then when it moved to Brook Drive, it was even more difficult to find, wasn't it?
Because I would say it was hardest to find because it wasn't really a shop, it was all boarded up. I mean, yeah, but you're right, Brook Drive was also...
Brook Drive was just like one of those, it was like a doorbell with the word These, I think, underneath it, handwritten, about...
Very faded.
Very faded. So otherwise you'd just walk straight past it and not realise it was a shop at all.
Yeah. That's right. It was more like a distribution office than actually a shop.
Yeah. But actually, probably one of the best record shops in London, I thought.
It was, and it was a good place to work. And the people that used to come along were mainly, you'd get people from overseas would come over, and they'd spend half a day in the shop and buy a big pile of things, which made it worthwhile keeping it open. But if it had just been dependent on London custom, I think it would have, it wouldn't have been any point in doing anything more than an afternoon a week, I think.
Right, right.
But obviously, like so many of these shops, it's met its demise.
Yeah.
Many years ago now.
Yeah.
So that's how it all started, anyway.
So you were at these and you decided to start your own label, Paradigm Discs.
Yeah, just for the purpose of doing that one compilation, and then after that I thought, well, I might as well, because by the time you've set up all this, like, who am I going to sell this to, and you get a few distributors, and at that time there were actually a good deal more distributors than there are now. I mean, that the CD market was still quite young. and there was a lot of interest in this whole idea of avant-garde or experimental music for the first time being on CD at that time. Yeah. So and then I just thought, well, let's put out another disc then, and I put out, and this time it was going to be one that I was actually on, and so it was a Morphogenesis one. And that then led to Trevor Wishart and so on.
Well, today you've brought in a new disc, which is called Max Eastley, Installation Recordings 1973 to 2008.
Yeah.
This is a double CD, and this has just come out?
Yeah, it's literally just a few weeks old now.
Right.
And it's actually the first thing I've put out for over 2 years. Uh-huh. So I've been fairly quiet, and it's taken actually a good deal of that time to put this together. It's been quite a slow process. The usual thing of having a huge archive of reels of tape and then having to, A, get them transferred and then clean them up and then edit them and select.
Right.
You know, so there's, and it all seems to take such a long time. I mean, you know.
Yeah,
but that's what I quite like about these sorts of projects in a way is, I mean, no one else is going to do it. I don't think anyone would be bothered. I mean, they might put it together a lot more quickly, you know,
right.
Because you could do that. But I really wanted to.
Is that because it is presumed that it is commercially it is completely.
Fairly unsaleable.
Right.
Yeah. Fair well, enough. Relatively for my label, it's probably slightly more saleable than previous releases.
Right.
But that's because of Max's legacy and his importance within the sound sculpture scene, if you like.
Well, tell us. This is the first time I've seen the CD. Mm. You've just brought it in and handed me.
Yes, I'm sorry.
No, that's all right.
I should have.
So really, perhaps you can tell me something about it.
It's kind of split almost equally between motor-driven kind of installations that are recorded inside different kinds of gallery spaces.
Hmm.
Some of them quite tiny sounds that are massively amplified or in fact sometimes just kept very quiet. In different kind, and they're all because they're all in different resonant rooms, big some really big echoey rooms, and some in more tiny kind of site specific stuff. It does have quite a variety of acoustic backgrounds to the actual installation sounds themselves.
Right.
And then the other 50% odd of the material is all aeolian, sort of wind driven outdoor stuff. So there you've got this, big blustery sound with again various sort of soundscapes going on in the background, bird song, dogs.
Right.
Sometimes it's residential, so you get cars going past, and it's so apart from the actual sounds themselves, the actual sculptural the sound pieces, you've got this tapestry in behind each piece that has its own kind of identity as well.
Right.
So it could almost be seen as a sort of field recording thing with sound sculptures sort of in the foreground. So it's that's one of the things I like about it, and also it's none of the tracks are particularly long. I think 4 or 5 minutes is as much as you'd get.
Right.
And then it crossfades. There's lots of crossfading.
All right.
So I don't know whether that's a DJ nightmare, radio nightmare. endless the quite long crossfades from indoors to outdoors. So they're really whole sections of like 4 or 5 tracks that create a sequence or a suite.
Yeah. So do you have a personal connection with Max? Is there some reason why have you sort of chosen to release this at this point?
I don't know why, but Max. I did a CD with Max and Peter Cusack, which again was very much installation based, with Peter Cusack playing instruments and also. Doing the field recordings. There's a lot of field recordings as well. Mm. And that was a CD I put out probably around 10 years ago now. And I've had, intermittent contact with Max over the years, and he dropped in a demo of just his sounds on their own without anything of Peter's work or anybody else. I mean, in fact, this is Max's first solo CD as well. Everything he's done otherwise tends to be with other people who are either playing certain instruments or you know, or in some way are accompanying him. But so there's actually no playing on this CD at all, apart from on two tracks. But you can't really call that playing. It's just operating spinning tops and playing a grass blade. Right. At one point, George Lewis plays a grass blade, and that's about as virtuosic as it gets, really.
How do you play a grass blade?
I'm not quite sure. I think you kind of seem to remember. You have to have one of those.
I had to ask. I'm
like
sorry.
Like couch grass, like a really thick blade.
Right.
And then you use it as if it were a reed, and you sort of place it between the two sides of your thumbs. And
And blow through it.
And it kind if you've got a slit in the grass blade, it can operate as a reed.
Right.
To some extent.
So. Yes. So that's the exception, isn't it? That's the last track, in fact.
So anyway, Max dropped off this demo, and I lived with it for a long, long time. I said, look, I want to do it, And he was sort of thinking, well, you know, maybe I should hedge my bets as to who should release this thing. And I think Sub Rosa had made an offer to release it, and I managed to persuade him not to do that.
Right.
But just partly because it would be easier if he was around and it was done locally.
Yes.
For various reasons, really.
Right.
But this is the end result.
Right. It might surprise you to know that I actually saw a copy in a shop on Wednesday.
Oh, right. Which shop was that? It must have been...
Is this a surprise to you?
Well, no, not really. I mean,
no?
Was it in London?
No.
Oh, well, that does surprise me then.
Right.
Yeah, because, I've not been...
I went to Leicester.
Oh, God, of course.
Yes.
Yes, I sent a few to Ultima Thule.
Right.
Yeah.
So coming out of the station, of course, you looked to that corner of Conduit Street where the shop used to be, which is now Tesco.
Oh, right.
And you have to open an iron gate.
Yes.
You press a buzzer.
Yeah.
And a voice comes out of the wall, the door opens. You have to go up three flights of stairs.
Sounds like Resonance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there it is, Ultima Thule. It's exactly as it was
on
the corner, but now they're up on the third floor, and it's still Alan and Steve Freeman.
Yeah.
Who are just about breaking even, I think.
Yeah, well, tough times, isn't it, really?
Exactly, that's what they were saying.
Especially for selling music.
Yes.
You know,
but there it was in the rack. So,
well, they're people I've known since my teens. In actual fact, I've known them a very long time, long since before they were, above ground, as it were, as a shop. So that's another old connection, and we've maintained that over the years. You know,
shall we play a track?
Let's have some music, for goodness.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So what are we going to play first? This is CD 1, track 5.
I recommended that we start with that, and if you could announce it. Is that one of the Aerophone pieces?
I'm actually struggling to find the list of...
The track listing's on about page 3, so flip open.
This is confusing. Oh, yes, there we are.
Yeah?
So track 5 it was, isn't it? Aerophones 2.
Okay. So it's part of a sequence. Again, this is sort of midway into a sequence, so...
Okay. I might get this. No, it should be that one. Thank you.
Well, I did warn you that it might be a radio nightmare.
Yes, what's happening there?
That was the start of the next track because it crossfades in, and the start ID for the following track was just about to begin. But it's just got a lot of the tracks have these long crossfades. So that was.
But in effect, but why has it got? You mean it was already designed for some other purpose?
Well, to be honest with you, I mean they should be played really in big blocks. Like some of the blocks are about 20 minutes long.
Right. Mm. So these are kind of extracts from. From installations.
Yeah. So that was going from an outdoor one.
Right.
The aerophones.
Yeah.
Which are essentially, they're made of long strips of latex that are stretched over kite-like frames and then on quite thin, they're on quite thin stems, and they can be planted into the ground, and they're usually sort of half a dozen or more of them are stuck in the ground anywhere where there's a windy kind of, where it's windy. And that, I think that's on a hilltop somewhere in the north of England.
Right.
There's another example on the second CD where it's actually coastal, so
right.
You get a kind of coastal ambience going on as well.
Yeah,
but it's just amazing this kind of high tension racket these strips of latex actually make.
Right.
That's a photo of one.
Well, yes, there's a booklet with the various sort of colour photographs. I mean, they do look amazing actually.
Mm.
I haven't seen any. I went to the Sonic Boom exhibition.
Yeah.
You had something there.
Yes, there were various little things there.
Right, but I haven't actually seen any of these in situ. I mean, have you seen them in location?
I'm also quite ignorant on them, to be honest with you. I've seen videos, so I'm a little bit more familiar with putting together the sound and the visual.
Right.
But I actually quite like the two things, you know, being able to hear it without seeing it. For me, it's quite an interesting. I like that abstraction of it.
Right.
They
look fascinating.
Yeah.
Sort of structures, kind of quite fragile looking structures in a
yes.
way.
Yes.
Sort of in the landscapes.
Yeah.
And let's see.
Well, they're all aerophones you're looking at there. Those
right.
Ones, that one of them's on a rooftop in Japan.
Oh, right, right. And didn't he? He made an instrument, hasn't he? Did he make an instrument called an arc or something?
Yeah, the arc is the main thing that Max uses these days as a performing instrument, and he's working with various people in a supporting role for quite big groups.
Yeah,
he's kind of like their wild card, and gets gigs at the Barbican Centre and. Yeah, I don't really know the half of what he gets up to in terms of actually playing, but he does work a lot as an improviser with the arc, which is basically it's a string that's held in tension over two kind of hinged pieces of board that he then bows and feeds that into effects and stuff like that.
Right.
I mean, so that's quite a large part of what Max does, but the installation work is obviously on a more grandiose scale, and he'll take over a floor of a gallery and fill them with his devices. And he's done quite a few projects like that. I mean, there was one thing at the Eden project in Cornwall.
Right.
I think he's done the Science Museum in London.
So a lot of them are sort of concerned with nature and the environment.
I mean, he's been involved quite a lot in this Cape Farewell project that you hear about in the media quite a lot. There's quite a number of very well-known artists who've been involved in it, artists and comedians and TV people, which involves this going off into the Arctic and observing and coming back and making work based on your experiences of the depletion of glacial stuff in the Arctic.
So I mean, some of these tracks go back to 1973.
Yeah.
So could it be said that he was something of a pioneer in this field?
I think you're right. I think he was. I think he's kind of stuck at it over the decades, really.
Yeah.
With some tenacity, because there's not that many other people in within Britain that have worked in this particular area.
No.
And I mean, he's done lots of work with other people. I mean, famously, I suppose, that was in 1975. There was a his only other, if you like, solo thing, which is actually a split record with David Toop on one side and one side of Max's sounds, some of which are very similar recordings on this CD, which was released on Brian Eno's Obscure Records label. And I always loved that record as well. I mean, all these, you know, these mysterious sounds like hydrophone recordings, you know, about hydrophones.
Right.
Underwater oh, yes. recordings.
Yeah.
And so...
So that was, what, 75?
Yeah.
And yeah. wasn't that... I think that was re-released in 97 or something?
I know it came...
I think, maybe.
Perhaps, yes. They might have licensed the whole lot. Not sure, actually, right. but I'm sure it's out by now on CD, yeah. I would have thought. But I know it took a long time for those Obscure records to make a digital appearance.
Yeah. And didn't he started as a folk singer, I think.
Ha-ha, did he? you've done more research on Max. It's not, yes, he probably...
So, I don't know if that's...
Probably sang in the bath before then as well.
All right.
But I don't know.
So we're going to overlook this, are we?
No, I don't know. He does play guitar. He's quite a competent guitar player. But
yes, I read a bit about him, and it seemed he did have a spell as a folk singer. I think he went to art school.
Yeah.
Apparently dropped out of secondary modern school at the age of 15 and went to some local art school, and then became a folk singer.
Yeah.
And then sort of made this choice, it seems. To be, I suppose, what one would call it, a sound artist.
But, yes, I know, that's right.
But at the time, would not have been called such a thing.
Yes, and I don't even know what you might have called him even at the time. I mean, a sound sculptor, perhaps. But, you know, I mean, it's so difficult to describe what you do. And Max would even have difficulty describing, you know, whether it's this or that or... what, you know, exactly what it is, because it is because his work is so interlinked with music as well. I mean, this CD is much more about the sound sculpture. I can't even think of the different words you might apply to it at the moment.
No.
But, I mean, I'd have to rack my brain to.
I mean, the only person it puts me in mind of slightly is Rolf Julius.
Yes, that's a nice comparison.
Who I only discovered, I don't know, a few years ago in a gallery in Paris, where he was sort of doing things with sort of in a gallery with gadgets and bits of machinery and water and so on.
Yeah. Yes, he is similar to Max in the sense that there's a lot of subtlety involved, a lot of, you know, involved in micro decision making on a very small level. Nothing grandiose or not anything particularly over the top. Quite, you know, you have to, you know, you could almost, if you weren't paying attention, you could walk past it.
There is
that in common with some of Max's work.
Shall we play another track?
Let's stick on another track. Did we decide on CD2 track 7?
CD2 track 7. We know what this is called?
This is Indoors now.
This is called I've made this mistake again.
Yeah.
Installation number 3, part 2.
Okay.
Icon Gallery, Birmingham, 1979.
Yes.
4 minutes 30.
Yeah, this is a downstairs in a basement that he had at the Icon Gallery.
Thank you.
Well, you're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM. Today's guest is Clive Graham, and we're playing tracks from Max Eastley, Installation Recordings, 1973 to 2008. And this track, I think, is... I've lost it again. Which one is it, Clive?
Seven.
It's the Icon Gallery, Birmingham, 1979, installation number 3, part 2. And as luck would have it, we have been given permission to continue this broadcast for a further half hour. So we're going to be playing some more tracks from Max Eastley Installations. And Sandra, I shall be half an hour late. Okay.
Yeah, and that was a fade into the next piece, which is another Aerophone track, one of the ones I was mentioning actually on the beach in Torquay. But prior to that was the Installation in Birmingham, which is again was actually a very very tiny sounds, but quite massively amplified using contact mics. And there's actually a photo of it on the centre spread. If you have a look.
Uh-huh.
At the centre spread.
Very centre spread.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
On the right-hand side, that's the installation in question. So
right.
The visual doesn't really... I mean, it looks like fishing rod, or more like, you know, the
well, we've got...
Fishing line.
You've got a tiled floor with long strips of what looks like pale grey kind of strips laid out on the floor, and then periodically on those strips, we've got like a square metal, just a piece of flat...
Some sort of tile, isn't it? A plate or something.
Yeah.
And underneath that is the microphone, and then these those long kind of that fishing line.
Yes.
It's motor driven at one end, and the other end just has a striker that randomly hits the plate.
Right.
I mean, that's one of the things that Max is quite interested in is the element of randomness, but being created by something that is motorized, which unusually a motorized thing will almost guarantee you're going to get repetition.
Yeah.
Which, of course, obviously there is repetition in that piece. There is in all of these installations. But within it is you could also focus in on it and see a lot of change and variety within the pattern. So, and as is also quite common, he'll have several of these things operating at the same time, identical ones, so you get an interaction between the different sounds. But that was actually one installation. I wasn't there, but that was actually quite loud in the end because of the amplification involved. But the original sound source very tiny.
Right, right.
But I it has a nice reverb to it as well. The room reverb is nice. The sort of nice basement sound.
Yeah, yeah. So there is some, yes, here on the programme notes, he says, I began as a visual artist and in 1972 started using sound by applying movement and the materials of sculpture to the basic principles of musical instruments.
Mm.
Yeah,
okay. there's a short bit of text from Max, not a huge amount of writing. I mean, there's 20 pages in the booklet, but literally just three paragraphs of text and the rest is... It's predominantly photographic, really.
Right.
Just to give people some idea of what it is actually creating the sounds they're listening to.
Yeah. All right. World Music.
Yeah, that was...
1990, played by Steve Beresford, Max Eastley and Dave Holmes. But he was involved with the early days of the London Musicians Collective, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
Did things with Paul Burwell, apparently.
Yes.
And
Yeah, a lot of those guys. There was also a thing called Circadian Rhythm, which was supposedly a 24-hour piece. It was actually terminated long before 24 hours because I think people ran out of strength to carry on playing. But and that was a group of about 15 or more people from the scene at the time. I mean, Hugh Davis was very much a colleague and friend of Max's.
Right.
Another instrument builder. And then there were, of course, all these new pioneering improvisers, likes of Evan Parker, who also worked with Max, playing along to installation pieces. In fact, the Serpentine Gallery installation that we'll hear next did have a section with Evan Parker playing along, but I excluded that. I didn't want any played instruments really on this. But you're right to point out World Music with Steve Beresford. But that was World Music was a project that was with David Toop and Terry Day, I believe, as well, and you know a handful of people that went on tour and did this thing where they would put noise making devices on the end of ropes. I mean, typically, like what's the Australian thing called, where they when you're in the jungle and you whirl the thing about. It's going to come to me in a minute. But other things, like they would put cassette recorders and in playback mode with a built-in speaker and radios on the end of ropes and anything that would make a whirling sound, like typically tops, right. Spinning tops. They played on stage. They would have to have a huge kind of safety net erected between them and the audience because these things were whirled at some speed overhead, and then and that would be the whole everything. Every instrument had to be whirled in some manner. So that was very much a Burwell kind of idea.
Yes. Well, I think that I read the description. I think where Burwell was throwing cymbals around a room where they were hitting the walls, and it seemed to be sounded quite dangerous. And consequently, I think some of them when they did it again, I think they had to wear sort of like Japanese style helmets, straw helmets.
Oh, right. I don't know. I mean, there were.
I don't think I'm making this up.
No. It's all very.
I'm sure I read it somewhere.
No, there was quite a strong sense of theatre in some of those pieces. I mean, this is pre-Bo Gamelan as well. You know, this kind of very well maybe. Maybe it's not pre, but they were at the same sort of time.
Yeah.
That whole period of exploration. And the early LMC building was a perfect place to try these sort of things out because it was so kind of... it was just an empty, hard space.
Yeah.
So you could you could set fire. I think there was fire, in fact, at the Circadian Rhythm. I'm fairly sure that fire is credited as being part of the instrumentation.
Right.
Yeah, it's got kind of anything goes, really. So there's a small kind of World Music track on this, which is basically spinning tops.
Yes.
And
so this is spelt WHIRLED, world, but also obviously supposed to sound like world, as in WORLD.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I've got a bit of word blindness today. I can't remember the name of that Australian...
No, I don't know about that, I'm afraid.
That's going to hopefully it'll come to me in the next 20 minutes and I can shout it out.
Yeah. Great. All right.
But
well,
maybe
should we play
maybe we'll have time for a bit of world music, but I was going to suggest playing
what are we going to play now?
The Serpentine Gallery piece, which is CD1 track 8, and this starts after the fade in because it had about 30 seconds of the boys choir. There was a choir that came through the Serpentine Gallery and spontaneously started singing along to the harmonics that are being created by Max's. Max had this string installation on the go, giving off this harmonic and being choir boys and a bit kind of rebellious and away for the day. Started sort of chiming in with and singing a few overtones. We miss about the first 30 seconds of that, but should pick up the end of it at any rate.
So this is Serpentine Gallery installation.
Yeah.
With impromptu harmonies from the Children of St. Paul's Cathedral School Choir.
Yes.
1976.
Yeah, actually, in fact, there are a couple of internal crossfades within this track because what I was given on the master tape for this was all a bit bitty, so I've actually created a couple of crossfades internally. So there's actually three separate sort of sections to it.
Thank you.
word I wanted to say was bull roarer.
Bull roarer.
Bull roarer. Two words, I think.
So remind the listeners what that was.
Well, they've probably been shouting at the radio saying, bull roarer, you clown, bull roarer.
That's the Australian whirling thing.
It's an Aboriginal kind of gero type, sort of, I don't know quite what it's made of, piece of wood, which has got grooves cut into it. Mm-hmm. And when it's whirled overhead, there's a rope attached, obviously, and right. that goes across these grooves and creates this quite spooky sound that can travel long distances across the plains. It's a communication device.
All right. Well, that was from 1976. I have to say, I didn't really pick up the harmonies of the children.
Sorry, that was right at the very beginning.
Right. It caught me out there. But I did hear the footsteps.
Yeah,
the footsteps were good. That was in the Serpentine Gallery. Yeah. The next track sounds interesting. I must ask you about this, even though we probably won't play it.
Uh-huh.
It says installation for the film Clocks of the Midnight Hours,
yeah.
a film directed by Simon Raynell in 1990.
Yes.
Anything?
Do you know Simon Raynell?
No.
All? Right. Well, he did this film for the Arts Council, and it's basically I've not seen it, but it's a documentary of Max's work.
Ah.
And there were various field recordings that he went out and did. In fact, the aerophones on the beach at just outside of Torquay were recorded by him, and some other very fine recordings are also credited to him.
Hmm.
He's actually a professional sound recordist.
Hmm.
And was working at the time for a TV company. Maybe that's not true. Maybe he's always been freelance, and he's freelance now. But he also, oddly enough, runs his own record label, which has been releasing loads of stuff of late, including things with Max. It's an label for improvised music called Another Timbre.
All right.
And actually quite a prolific and busy and growing, successful label.
Right.
And gets good reviews.
Hmm. Which reminds me that you actually worked as a sound recordist, didn't you, on Catalina Varga?
That's true. I did.
Yes.
I did. I got roped into that at a very early stage and went out to the Carpathians.
Right.
The mountains in Romania. And was primarily searching for things to record, like frogs and insects and just genuine, authentic Romanian landscape sounds.
This is a film by Peter Strickland.
Yes. I mean, this was before the film was shot. It was just very early stages, because Peter was saying, I need to go out there and do these recordings, and all I've got is a mini disc. And I said, well, look, that's just not going to be good enough. If you're going to record something as quiet as these sounds that you're after, you really need to get a decent kind of microphone with a decent preamp on it. So I offered my services. I sort of sold myself to him, really. I mean, he's a friend of old, because his background is music as well.
Yeah.
So
wasn't he with the Sonic Catering Band?
He was. That, yes.
I remember buying those. I had a set of those records, which came in a pseudo pizza box.
Yeah.
And I almost completed the set. I had 4 of 5.
Oh, yeah. Was the label Peripheral Conserve?
I can't remember, actually.
Seems to be springing to mind.
But I was amazed, because I had these records by Peter Strickland, and then suddenly there's this quite successful, well, very successful film. It's a good film, of course.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, the film was eventually shot and on 16mm, it's a full-length feature film, crewed and acted by Hungarians,
right,
and shot in Romania. And it was then in the can for quite some time. No film festival around would show it,
really?
Even the local ones to where, because he's based in Hungary. Even the Sarajevo Film Festival wouldn't show it. And then suddenly the Berlin Film Festival shows an interest, and the next thing is it wins a Silver Bear.
Right.
Lo and behold, for the sound recording, although I don't think that was particularly for my efforts. I wasn't involved as the sound recordist. I just did some shots of the opening sequence. I was involved in doing that. But it's a line of work I wouldn't mind considering doing. And in fact, I'm going to see what he's doing for his next feature film.
Okay.
But yes, no, it's been very successful for him. It's good to see, isn't it, really? Sort of coming out.
It's a good film, actually.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially as a first one, anyway.
Yeah.
First feature film.
Yes. Okay, well, back to Max Eastley.
Should we have an outdoor piece? Or
absolutely. Whatever you suggest. What's your...
Let's go back outdoors.
Okay.
CD2 track 3.
CD2 track 3 is two Aeolian... you say Aeolian or Aeolian?
I don't know.
Oh, I think it's Aeolian, as in Aegean Sea, isn't
it? Anything that's spelt with that many vowels is optional, as far as
right,
I'm concerned.
Okay. Two Aeolian Harps, Part 2, 1980.
Yeah.
CD 2, I'll just check I've got the right. Seems to be right. All right, so that was Two Aeolian Harps, Part 2 from 1980, by Max Eastley from the double CD, Max Eastley Installation Recordings, 1973 to 2008, which has just been released on the Paradigm label. And we have the, what do we call you? Director of Paradigm Discs? Clive Graham.
Yeah.
Distributor, publisher,
sole
proprietor of Paradigm Discs, has been live in the studio to talk about this CD. Where is it available from, Clive? Where can people buy it?
Well, it's starting within the UK. Should we assume we're dealing with just the UK here? I suppose that's the safest bet.
They can get it from you, can't they? They can go to the Paradigm Discs website.
I'm not doing that sort of thing anymore.
Okay.
One-offs. No, I'm trying to leave that for the time being. So
it'll be the usual rough trade, and
I haven't gone to Rough Trade, and not sure if I will at the moment. But
no.
Sister Ray, it's down at Sister Ray's,
right?
And it's also at Second Layer up in Highgate. In fact, I dropped those off today. So that's a pleasant shop to go browsing through.
And Ultimate Thule in Leicester.
Ultimate Thule in Leicester, which always good to mention them.
Yep.
For those who are listening in Leicester. And otherwise, all good bookshops, you know.
Right.
Or whatever. Yes. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know exactly.
It'll pop, seek it out.
It'll pop up. It pops up all over the place because it goes. I mean, it's with the big distributors in the States and with Metamkin in France. But but they then disseminate these things to the most unlikely of remote corners, which is interesting to see. Mm-hmm. You know, every once in a while you do a search and you find it's in various places. Whatever you do, don't download it. It's bound to be blogged somewhere by now. It's been out a few weeks, so that means it's probably available for free.
Yeah.
Actually, I, to be honest, I've not yet seen it.
Now, so we should finish up with two tracks, maybe, do you think?
We could do.
We've got World Music.
World Music is very short. So, yeah, you've got the sleeve there. So what? All right. Who are the credits on this?
Well, it says played by Steve Beresford, Max Eastley and Dave Holmes.
Yes.
From 1990, 1 minute and 8 seconds.
Yeah.
But, this is an extract or?
These were just tiny snippets that I compiled together into a minute's worth. But they were so beautifully recorded that I thought it would be worth including them. And it was a late decision because I really didn't want any playing at all. Even though, you know, just winding up a spinning top is hardly a major effort, but it is playing. And then the last track is outdoors in Hadley Wood, where a few people. In fact, I saw Peter Cusack a couple of nights ago at the Bill Fontana opening, and I gave him a copy of this, and he said, "Oh yes, I recorded that." So there's extra information I can add to what I previously knew.
Okay.
The last track is recorded by Peter and played by Peter. Max Eastley, his wife Pamela Maher, and George Lewis is on that track. I don't know if anyone is there. Anyone else I've missed out from the final track?
Hannah Charlton.
Oh right, so it's someone I don't know.
Peter Cusack, Max Eastley, George Lewis, and Pamela Maher.
Yeah.
Grass Blade, played by George Lewis.
Yes, that's right.
That'll be on the final track.
That's the George Lewis, the trombone, the
which is called Swung
trombone.
Aeolian Flutes and Grass Blade.
Yeah, lots of bird life as well.
Right.
Go for it. We're running
okay,
out.
Then.
So
are we?
That's
okay,
it.
Then.
Great.
Well, thank you very much to Clive Graham from Paradigm Discs for bringing in the Max Eastley installation recordings.
Thank you very much.